welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure. Now, you penned an article about the perpetual grief of Aboriginal people. Can you tell us more about the Aboriginal cultural fire management practices that you mentioned in your article?
There's as many different Aboriginal cultural fire management practices in Australia as there are Aboriginal nations. So, you know, there's a lot of diversity that is there. The things that are happening in the north of the country is certainly different to what happens in the centre and the south of the country. But it's looking at returning to those traditional practices that were ongoing with Aboriginal people in reciprocal relationships with fire and with country for thousands and thousands of generations prior to colonisation.
Has the subversion of these practices actually potentially made the fire crisis worse, do you think?
My personal opinion is that, yeah, it has, that there has been a radical change in the fire regimes in and across Australia, and that this has resulted in us seeing more frequent fires, hotter fires, and fires that are more likely to be out of control.
I know that much of the Aboriginal identity comes from ties to the land and the environment and the sacred places of the land there in Australia. Can you tell us more about the trauma that Aboriginal people in Australia are experiencing during this crisis?
So in addition to the trauma that, you know, everybody is experiencing, for Aboriginal people, there's also those, as you mentioned, the links to country and connections to homelands and places. So with those fires, they're not only just burning the infrastructure that we live in and that we use, but they're also burning those sacred and ancient spaces that exist out in the landscape. So there's kind of multiple layers of grief and loss in the burning of the bush.
Yeah. Not to devalue the trauma that anyone can experience during this bushfire crisis, of course. But yeah, I'm under the impression that many non-Indigenous Australians don't adequately understand this trauma they can experience. And thus many of the kind of recovery projects don't acknowledge the differences. How can we improve recovery approaches, especially in the wake of the bushfire, in order to avoid inflicting unnecessary trauma to the communities of Indigenous Australians and sacred lands?
We believe that a lot of those recovery efforts, a lot of leadership already exists within Aboriginal communities, and that they should be the ones to formulate what is going to work best for them and their community. So, yeah, making sure that Aboriginal people's voices are listened to and their specific needs are being addressed in that recovery process, that it's not a one-size-fits-all approach.
What I have needed to do in terms of being able to listen to what Indigenous people are saying is that I've had to look into my own cultural assumptions.
Yes, yes.
And understand those. I haven't been able to listen to what Aboriginal people are really saying without also investigating and deeply understanding my own viewpoint. What I've found useful is what some people call open listening, which is to come with as little assumptions as possible and to listen very carefully without interrupting or saying back what your perspective is all the time.
I was just thinking, you know, while yourself and Jessica were speaking, it reminded me of that awful event that happened down in Victoria where an Aboriginal elder went to, I think it was one of the evacuation centres, and was being told that they'd already helped enough of, you know, of his people today, and that the emergency response that's being enacted for people is only for a specific set of people.
Mm.
The charity that was responsible for that incident apologised profusely for that event occurring. But it still doesn't stop the fact that it did occur in the first place, and that that person, whoever the worker was, felt that they were in the right position to be able to say to that Aboriginal person, no, we've helped enough of your people today and for you to go away. And that, you know, that I think, well, did they turn other, you know, did they have non-Indigenous people turn up and say, no, sorry, we've helped enough of your people today? I doubt that that would even be a thought process. You know, that it's the generosity and it's the giving and it's, you know, looking after each other and, you know, that kind of ideology of mateship and giving each other a hand. But when it comes to Aboriginal people, it's like, hold on, no, yous are asking for too much. And that just that as a bare example to say, you know, that there is different ways that this recovery process needs to, you know, check its own privilege, I guess, and think about how it's interacting with Aboriginal people. And if that's to the detriment of Aboriginal people, then that's adding to that perpetual grief.
Yeah. Well, we can only hope that as the bushfire season goes on and we are given more opportunities for kindness and mateship in Australia, that we can see that gap there, that gap of understanding brought together. But thank you, Jessica and Vanessa, for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Ben.
Absolute pleasure.